With the familiar tones of AC/DC, we begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, December 29th, and we come to you coast to coast from the North Pole to the South Pole every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, over-the-air affiliates, TuneIn, iHeart, and everywhere else that you can get a signal in this great world of ours. Special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service every day, and especially think of you and your families during the holiday season. Of course, we wish all of you a great Happy New Year ahead. I'm going to be with you filling in for Andrew Zarian once again, talking about the biggest news of the wrestling weekend, which of course is all about Saturday's AEW World's End, which saw several Match of the Year candidates, no title changes, and two big returns, which are Kenny Omega and Adam Copeland. So we'll chat about that. I'm going to take a run through the entire card, the feeling going in the show, coming out of the show. I'll give you all my thoughts on everything that happened on Saturday. And of course, I'm going to look ahead to another busy week we got coming up. The wrestling world, it never stops, does it? Not even for the holidays. What's happening this week? Of course, AEW's debut, the simulcast debut, I guess you could say, on Max with AEW Dynamite coming up this Wednesday. And chat about some of Tony Khan's comments this past week. WWE's final Raw on USA Network. We've said that before. We'll talk more about that. Now the other news of the week. And of course, we're also going to look ahead to 2025, you and I. We're talking about some of the key things that I think are important for all the big promotions, WWE, AEW, some TNA, maybe some New Japan in there. We'll talk all about that. A packed show ahead. I cannot wait to get started. So all that and more await you. So let's stick around for the next hour, shall we? The final Wrestling Observer Live Sunday edition for 2024. We're coming back right after this Wrestling Observer Live. Back with you in another Sunday edition of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. I'm a contributing editor to the website. I'll be back with you as my residency, I guess you could say, my December residency ends on this very show. Andrew Zarian, welcome him back and starting next Sunday, January 5th. Be plenty to talk about. Of course, all the New Japan action, Wrestle Kingdom, Wrestle Dynasty, the first ever one there. So looking forward to having him back next week. I can guarantee you, Andrew is excited to be back next week. So looking forward to having him back on the airwaves. Let's get right into World's End, which happened, of course, Saturday night in Orlando, Florida, going head-to-head with WWE. They had a house show right down the street. Actually, I believe, according to WrestleTix, slightly outdrew World's End, but were pretty comparable, all things considered. So over, give or take, you know, 16,000 people combined between the two venues running last night. I don't love the in-city head-to-heads. I think forces wrestling fans to make decisions that they shouldn't have to make. But however, you know, those things happen. That's what happened last night. But regardless of where you went, you saw some good action. But we'll focus on World's End, which saw a double return. Now, I love these. Who doesn't like returns, right? AEW thrives on them. WWE, of course, thrives on them. Everyone does. It's fun to welcome some people back. And the kind of the famous double return or double debut, I always remember, is AEW All Out when Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole burst onto the AEW scene essentially in the same segment. Now, this wasn't in the same segment, but back-to-back matches. Kenny Omega and Adam Copeland back in the company officially, I guess you could say, back in the storylines. And we'll talk about whether you could have flipped these. I kind of agree with some of the sentiment from Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio that perhaps the Continental Classic Finals should have closed the show with Omega being the main eventer, so to speak, and that being the moment. But AEW decided to go with Adam Copeland and feat due to the world title being the main event, the world title four-way. We'll chat about that in a minute. But let's start with Kenny Omega. So as I mentioned on this show, I do believe, and I mentioned on previous episodes of my podcast, Josh Nason's Punch-Out, that'd be promotional malpractice for Kenny Omega to not make his on-screen return to wrestling be in an AEW television set, so to speak. And he did. He showed up last night at World's End, as I somewhat expected he would. I'm glad he did. He confronted Kazuchika Okada after Okada's Continental Classic title victory, tournament victory over Will Ospreay. He retains the title that he put up going into the tournament. And afterward, you know, Christopher Daniels coming out on the stage saying he's no longer an EVP, so he can't present the title anymore. However, this guy can, and the EVP himself, Kenny Omega, coming out looking quite dapper in a suit. And he came out and he confronted Okada, went face to face, gave him the title, no fisticuffs, no physicality, none of that. This went head to head, face to face, so to speak. And Okada raised the title high and Omega simply walked away. And now Omega moves on to return to the ring on January 5th, this Saturday, I guess you could say, as you're listening to this, on January 5th, Wrestle Dynasty taking on Gabe Kidd. Yeah, I would love to see his in-ring return be in AEW. I think that'd be more fitting. However, we're going to get, and perhaps it's a case where he thinks maybe less fans will actually see it than they would in AEW if he's a little concerned about timing and those type of things. But the Rainmaker is going to be back coming this week. The Cleaner. I'm using my New Japan nicknames. But yeah, the Cleaner is going to be back, and eventually it looks to be at All In Texas, the way the shot was framed last night at World's End, and take on Okada once again. So that'll be quite interesting. But let's continue with Kenny Omega for just a minute. So Omega had been out since last December in terms of in-ring action, a multitude of ailments, the most serious of which was diverticulitis, and an ailment that he said nearly killed him because essentially went undiagnosed. And it could have been very bad news for Omega. And you read the stories about that. So he had last been on screen in May, and it was attacked by the Elite, the Young Bucks, Okada, and Jack Perry to take him out in storyline. He had surgery and so on and so forth. He's been out essentially the whole year and finally return, and hopefully get to see a lot more of Kenny Omega in 2025. What that schedule will look like, I'm very curious about that. I did not believe him one bit when he said he was if ABW essentially couldn't use him right now, so many guys didn't want to take a spot. He's a very important part of this company. He's part of the fabric of the founding. He's part of the promise of what this company was, and having him around is a very important thing in a lot of ways, and it's good to have him back. Very interested to see how they use him, how he works in the feud with the Elite. He's essentially wanting to get some revenge. I saw point out that he didn't really seem that upset at Okada, considering Okada is one of the group that took him out in storyline back in May, you know, very calm, relaxed, and so on. Perhaps it's the business-like demeanor that we're going to get for a while from the former AEW world champion. But we're going to see that match, assuming in July, and the run-up should be good. We'll see what revenge he gets on the Elite as he form his own group, so to speak, and what does that look like. So a lot to come there with Kenny Omega. Let's go to Adam Copeland now. Of course, Adam Copeland making his return to the company at the end of the show. He had been out of action since, May? Double or Nothing, the barbed wire cage match with Malakai Black. That seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? It's crazy how much has happened between Double or Nothing and World's End. But essentially, you know, if you saw the show, Jon Moxley winning the four-way world title match, retaining the title, no big surprise there. And Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta put in the boots of Jay White. And FTR's music hits, and they come out. And the minute they came out and didn't immediately run down the ring, you kind of knew what was going to happen. Because, you know, a week prior, 2 weeks prior, something like that, they said they were coming to fight for the Fallen and weren't coming alone. And a lot of people, including myself, assumed that, all right, this is going to be the time that Copeland's going to make his return. Asheville, North Carolina makes a lot of sense. But actually, this makes a lot more sense. Adam Copeland came out afterwards with those guys, rated FTR as their faction's name. And Copeland, FTR took out Castagnoli and Yuta, and then Copeland went face-to-face with Moxley, hit a big spear, got him in a crossface using a part of a chair, and since you ran off the champion, made him look like scalded dogs, quote JR, and called out the Death Riders and say, we're going to take everything from you, and we're going to have a trios match coming up this Wednesday on Dynamite. Adam Copeland's in-ring return, and team with FTR against Jon Moxley, Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. And an interesting footnote, side note, about Jon Moxley and Adam Copeland, when they step in the ring this Wednesday in that trios match, is going to be the very first time they have shared the ring in their long, illustrious career. So the first time they square off one-on-one, again, that'll be the first time. How about that? I did not see Pac there last night, unless for some reason he flew on the screen and then disappeared. So I don't think he was there last night. Again, he's not announced for the show as of this point, so perhaps a trios title match could be coming down the road if they're really going to try to take everything. So I thought it was a good return. I think given how everything happened and doing the the Sunday morning quarterback thing. Fitting, right? I think it should have been reversed. And I kind of agree with the sentiment that you end the show with potentially one of your biggest matches that you have coming up in the year ahead versus a match you're going to see coming up on Wednesday. Now, the question then becomes, well, what was more important, the world title match or the Continental Classic Finals? I think if you really think about it, if you're honest with yourselves, that the Continental Classic Finals turned out to be a lot more important than the world title match. And we'll talk more about this in the next segment of kind of a trend and something I hope the AEW gets back to in 2025 is that your world title becomes the biggest pursuit for everyone in the company, including your biggest stars. Granted, you can't have every single person chasing it, but that should be the goal, right? And AEW really hasn't had that for a while. Sometimes they'll do these multi-man matches just because it doesn't feel like the hottest thing to show. So in that case, end with what would be, which turned out to be, and I think everyone would expect to be, Okada versus Will Ospreay. We're going to talk more about all that in just a few minutes. But yeah, Adam Copeland and Kenny Omega are back. Is it going to make a difference? Is it going to help? It certainly can't hurt. But is it going to start bolster attendance? Is having these guys in ratings, is having these guys back in the mix, are people going to be excited to see them? Can they make their respective angles hot and make people think, I got to see this. I have to be there to see these guys live. We're going to talk more about that and more after the break. Come on back. More Wrestling Observer Live in just a minute. Back on Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday, December 29th, the final Sunday of 2024. I'm ready to turn the page and move on to 2025. Don't know about you. Wrestling never stops, and we don't stop here on Wrestling Observer Live. Let's keep going on World's End for last night. Before we do, let's look at the poll results for what fans thought via our Twitter account. 39% said the pay-per-view was great. 27.9% said good. 15.7% said fine. And 17.2% said didn't like. That's based on 912 votes. Talk about the turn of Omega. Of course, Okada, the Continental Classic champion, defeating Will Ospreay in the finals. So we'll see what's next for Will Ospreay. Taking a lot of losses. Will Ospreay has in recent weeks, right? What's it building toward? What's his end goal? What's going to be next for him? He's one of the hottest wrestlers in the company, but he's defeated by Darby Allin, took a loss to Ricochet, now Okada. So he defeated Kyle Fletcher in the show opener, a match of the year contender. I think a lot of people think Okada versus Ospreay, also I think in some ways a match of the year contender as well. So some exciting stuff there. But what's next for Ospreay? Is he going to take some time off? Grant, he's bleeding like a stuck pig at the end of the show. I'm watching this show. And obviously they had the big three of people, free agents they signed early in the year with Okada, Ospreay, and Monet. Monet, we'll talk more about her in a second, but I think by far it's hard to dispute that Ospreay was the most important free agent signing that they had. Has it resulted in higher ratings and things like that? Not really. Should he have had the world title by now? I think you can make a case for that too. But regardless, we are where we are. We'll see what happens with Ospreay next. He is he's a made man in a lot of ways. But I you don't want to see him take too many more losses. So what's the next direction for him? And who is it against? And is he going to be part of this? This march against the Death Riders? Is he going to make some sort of union with Darby Allin, who just seems to, every time you turn on the TV, he's thrown downstairs or attacked or things like that. I think that dream of him being the next AEW world champion is dead for the time being, but we'll see what happens with Darby Allin. But yeah, what's next for Will Ospreay? Do you guys like kind of what's happening when it comes to his current status? Should he have been the world champion by now? I don't know. Let's go over some of the other big highlights, though. We'll leave Mr. Ospreay behind. We had MJF taking on Adam Cole to retain the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Yes, still a thing in 2024 at AEW World's End. This was a much maligned match going into this. This much maligned angle in a lot of ways. Yeah, I thought the match was pretty good. Both guys bled, and there was a lot of blood on the show, as you might imagine, with Ospreay bleeding and these guys. John Moxley had a giant gash on the back of his head during that four-way. But yeah, so this one, I think we're all kind of ready to move past this. It just was a case of bad timing with Adam Cole's injury. And I think in the annals of AEW, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, this comes down to just what could have been, right? That angle was so hot at the time. Everything seemed to be perfect. And then probably would have had Adam Cole winning the world title at last year, World's End, and continue a intense feud. And it never happened. Is Adam Cole going to get close to the AEW world title again? I don't know. This comeback of his, unfortunately, is just, it has not worked after the match. So this is, he takes a loss to MJF. He goes to his diamond ring. It backfires. He gets low blowed and then pinned. And that was it. So unfortunately, Adam Cole lost. Fans leading up this have been very tepid in their reactions to this angle. You know, some boos for Cole and things like that. It just does not seem right. Right. It just doesn't. And he's had to ask in interviews if he thought this angle should keep going. He said it should when he came back from injury. So here we are. And then after the match, MJF gets laid out anyway as the Undisputed Kingdom in full sans Wardlow, which I thought was interesting. But there was no turn when it comes to Mike Bennett, Matt Taven. Roderick Strong made his return and came out. And then Kyle O'Reilly, who had been kind of barking and feuding with Adam Cole over this whole thing for some reason, which still doesn't make any sense. They reunited. So the Undisputed Kingdom is back in action again. No Wardlow, which I think he might still be hurt. Maybe he's on the sidelines. I don't know. It's so hard with so many of these guys in AEW. Don't know where all this. Noah and they beat up Max and JF. They left him laying and all bloodied up. And just, this was just so weird. This whole thing, I don't know if MJF is going to get revenge or not. If he does, for what reason at this point? He won. He retained this ring, which it's so strange. Why, if they want to make this a thing, why does he need to have it? He's had it since it started in this company years ago. He's the only person that's ever had it, never come close to losing it. So what's the point of it? Just a thing to compete over that no one really cares about other than being used as a weapon in a match, right? So I don't know. This didn't really work for me. The match was fine, but I think, again, I kind of go into this. What did you feel going in it? What did you feel coming out of it? The feeling going in was tepid, and the feeling coming out of it was, thank God it's over. And that's unfortunate. Adam Cole is now with this group that they can't turn heel because you have so many heel groups and so many heel champions. I mean, you look from the top, John Moxley, heel. Konosuke Takeshita, heel. Okada, heel. Danny Garcia, face. But you have so many heel champions and heel guys on top, I don't think you have another group turn a heel, especially because MJF is heel. Imagine if they try to do a double flip again. MJF goes face, and then these guys go heel. I can't picture it, but I don't. As he was hugging these guys, there was no, there was some boos. So I don't know. They don't seem cool. They don't seem hot. And good luck on trying to rehab these guys. I think it's going to be a long time before they get hot. And unfortunately for Adam Cole, that's just the way things go. Let's see what else happened on this show. Jeff Jarrett set to make an announcement of his career coming out at Fight for the Fallen on Wednesday. Of course, he assumed some sort of retirement tour. They're all the rage for 2025. John Cena, Jeff Jarrett is about to make an announcement of his career. I feel like it's going to be some sort of swerve of some point that, you know, perhaps he said it's a year. His year's done or whatever, but he hasn't wrestled that much. He still physically looks great. And I guess we'll kind of see, we'll see what happens there. Again, it seems that when the assumptions are, of course, he's going to be done, then that's usually what happens with some sort of flip, some sort of change. What could it be? I don't know. So let's go over some of the other news and notes from the rest of the show. So one thing that should come up, this is another conversation on social media, was that should Kyle Fletcher beat Will Ospreay? That's another good one, right? So was it Kyle Fletcher's time to be coronated? Should he have come out of this tournament with the Continental Classic? I think the Classic, it worked in so many different ways. And I think it worked in this way. You could go so many different ways with who could have won it. Okada, his best showing, I think, since he's been under contract, and of this year, really showed out in the finals, and that was, again, a long match, kind of a specialty as far as how those things go. But yeah, I mean, Ospreay defeating Fletcher, I didn't see that happening, but yeah, there's so many different ways that you could go with this. And I think it's make these tournaments good. Now, what do they do with Kyle Fletcher? Bit of this nice hot streak. Osprey gets revenge on Fletcher for the WrestleDream loss and some sort of edge. So we'll see, are those guys going to keep feuding or is Fletcher move on to something else? This is kind of your key now is how do you keep Fletcher hot and how do you keep him in the mix? He's probably not going to pursue Takeshi for a title shot. So if you don't have him go for a title, who else is there that you can make, really can make him feel like he's more important and keep on this positive momentum and so on. That's one of the things when you have so many talents under contract and so many mouths to feed is you really have to work overtime and trying to figure out what's going to be a good angle, what's going to be a good thing, and what's going to be of interest to the fans. So we had Mariah May defeating Thunder Rosa, retain the AEW's women's title in a Tijuana street fight. This was fine. I mean, it was another plunder match, and you know, Rosa was kind of inserted into this over the past month or so. This whole show, in so many ways, just felt like retreads from Full Gear, and it also just felt like we have this pay per view in the books. We need something to get by. We don't want to use any of our big matches right now, so we're going to do things that somewhat make sense, and let's just move on. Again, no title. I don't think any challenger went into this show feeling like they could beat the champion. And that's one of the feelings coming out of it is going into this, I was kind of like, eh. You knew every AEW show is going to have great action. There's no doubt about that. Every single pay-per-view show always hits, I think, with like one or two exceptions. Every single show has felt important. And this show, you know, Mariah May retaining the women's title in the street fight. We had Kinosuke Takeshita defeating Powerhouse Hobbs to retain the international title. This was really good as well. You could have a Hobbs and Fletcher feud, perhaps. Hobbs came out of this looking great, and Takeshita, of course, you know what's going to be next for him. It's going to be impressive and big, and so on. Mercedes Moné defeating Chris Statlander to retain the TBS title. That was also a really good match. It got really great late. Of course, now Moné has two titles, two title defenses back to back over Statlander. She moves on to more title defenses. She seems to have her groove back again. That's exciting. So, but again, there's no who are the next challengers? These people. There's no obvious choices. I think it's going to be a slow burn with Toni Storm and Mariah May. Again, no obvious choices for any of the other champions. So, where does AEW go from here? How do you feel coming out of this pay per view? For me, I just feel it was a good show, good to great show in terms of in-ring, in terms of kind of where we're going from here. We still got a little ways to go, and I'd like to see real challengers that feel that they could beat the champions built up, and that's going to be a big part of 2025, which we're actually going to talk about in just a minute. Wrestling Observer Live coming right back after this. Back with you on another segment here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're going to talk about the year ahead, and we'll also talk about the week ahead, and we'll start with the next few days, of course, the final edition of WWE Raw on USA Network as they move to Netflix the week after for the big debut and kind of a lame duck show. I don't know about you. I don't get nostalgic for this as much as I used to. You know, I'm old enough where I remember where they moved to TNN and where they and they move back to USA and so on. I think because of that, I'm just kind of desensitized to a lot of these different moves and so on, because you're essentially still in the same family, right? Because they have SmackDown that is now on the on USA on Fridays. You have, obviously, WWE still in the presence with Peacock and so on. You know, WWE eventually, if they were to leave the Universal family, NBC Universal family altogether, yeah, you might kind of look back in this era and so on. But, you know, it's been a very long run. For Raw on USA and moving to Netflix, you're going to have this transition. Are people going to be able to find it easy? All the type of things, you know, see the old adage and the jokes that kept getting shared around this past Wednesday when NFL was on Netflix. And it's a day or a happy day of helping your grandparents try to figure out how to find these things and so on. It's going to be similar to that with Raw on Monday in a lot of ways. And there's going to be some people when these things happen, they're just left behind. And there's always so many things you can do. There are some places in in this country where you cannot get good cable access. You can't get phone access, like cell phone access. I was reading a story about how cell phones, the state of Wisconsin, shout out Wisconsin, that they are going to be, AT&T is shutting down their landlines by, I think, 2028, I believe, because it's just too expensive to run, and they have to figure out a way to get all these people in these rural areas cell phones that actually work, and these internet-powered phones, and so on. It's a whole mess. But yeah, it's a sign of the times. And these places moving, it's a sign of the times as well. You know, when it comes to the Netflix era, I don't know. I don't know if I'm as bullish in terms of that suddenly, you know, millions and millions of people are going to suddenly find WWE and they haven't been able to get it before. And all of a sudden they're going to be thinking, oh, wow, this is it, right? This is I finally, after all these years, because they were on broadcast TV just over, 2 weeks ago with Saturday Night's Main Event. And that number was, it was okay, but it wasn't like gangbusters. It wasn't like, cause you have this bigger audience you're reaching that the numbers match there. It just wasn't, it's more and more WWE. Can you imagine those weeks when you're going to add Saturday Night's Main Event, another 2 hours onto this stuff? I mean, how much WWE can one fan base take? Right. But I think the impact will be felt internationally more than it will be domestically. I think domestically, I think it's a big reason why WWE is really focused on having more PLEs outside the United States, and really, especially in like Europe and so on, they're really, really, really focusing on that. And I think this is why. This is where they see that they can draw more interest in new people that have never been to shows before. And the WWE is essentially at, I don't know, the saturation point in the United States, but maybe they feel like they are pretty close. And Saturday Night's Main Event is a good example of that. And that with Netflix, now they can reach all these different countries and have one consolidated place for people to watch them, give or take a few regions that still have to have their existing deals run out and so on and so forth. But I think that's a big thing to them. It's important. You know, they're a year ahead when it comes to them. I think it's continue to do what they do. They had a killer 2024. I mean, the company and TKO just make money hand over fist. A lot of the TKO attention will be focused on the UFC negotiations and their new TV rights deal. I think it's going to be split between multiple entities. I don't think I'm breaking news there, but I think it just makes a lot of sense to have different partners in the mix. But the WWE Peacock deal is also up in 2026, and that will become a bigger story, is where those PLEs go. There's so much conversation about the library and all that, and there's a lot of concern about that. I hear you. But I think the focus, really, if you're looking at it, is where those PLEs going to go. Netflix seems like they would pay up for them. Again, these once-a-month kind of big-hit type things. But is there another player that may want to get involved? I think you're going to see a pretty big, potentially big bidding war for that. Or, again, WWE just goes to a Netflix and says, give us a number we can't turn down and we'll make this easy and begin that consolidation effort into one place to watch WWE minus USA Network for SmackDown and so on. But, and who knows, at the end of their deal, that could consolidate too. We are in our lifetimes and in immediate lifetimes, we could see a case where Netflix has it all and we're back in that era, but we're not there yet. So I think that's something interesting to watch in the months and months ahead. The deal seemed to come sooner. Like the AEW deal certainly took a lot of time to take place, but the WWE deal was announced relatively early in the year, January, I do believe. I did the year in review series for the website, but yeah, be another interesting year for WWE. They're going to sign any free agents. I'm sure they will, which flips to AEW. So AEW, again, the consternation and the concerns and all these things, I mean, every single day, they're the most discussed, debated, beguiled, whatever word you want to use, organization in recent wrestling times, I think for a lot of different reasons. And a part of that is because the promotion feels a lot different. The fan base, very online. The haters, very online. So what is their look ahead when it comes to 2025? What's important? Well, they have their new TV deal. So they're set guaranteed money for the next 3 years, which is good. But really, as I've said before, the most important part is the next 2 years. And why I say that, because TV negotiations typically start sooner with them. So if they want to get picked up for that fourth option year, which I believe is reported around like $200 million, I think Dave Meltzer might have said that, if they want to get there, there's a lot of work that has to be done between now and the time year three begins and that the ticker starts for year four. I don't think it's any guarantee they're going to get that fourth year. And there's a lot of work, to be done. So where do you start? Well, there's really no excuses anymore. All their talent is healthy. They have Omega's back, as I mentioned, Adam Copeland's back, MJF is back. I mean, they have all these talents. They have Swerve Strickland, all these people, all their top guys are healthy, and there's more that haven't even come back yet. Samoa Joe is not been seen in months and months and months. He's coming back. You have 4 hours. You don't have to worry about Rampage anymore. You have 4 hours every single week, which you can put together the best possible TV shows you can. Can Tony Khan do that? Can he and his company do that? Can he turn the math around, as John Cena once said, and start to produce these really compelling shows like he used to? Can he make the world title more important than it used to be, or like it was in the past, rather, and it's kind of taken a back seat to other bigger names? Can he put these shows together like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I can't believe I'm seeing this. I can't believe I'm seeing this. Can we do that on regular TV? Now, they put together a ton of great matches, but people come in, they leave, people go out. There's a lot of consternation when it comes to talents aren't being used and not a lot of questions, which leads to one of the questions I asked Tony Khan during this past week's World's End media call, which revolved around, you know, with Rampage going away, you have, 50 some odd hours, give or take, of TV every week that is now going away. And I think for them, that is potentially a pretty good thing. And you have, 4 hours to focus on. Do you foresee roster cuts coming as a result of that? Because you're going to have a lot more people just sitting around not doing anything. And I don't think you're going to insert a bunch of, low to mid carders all of a sudden in the mix. I don't think you're going to do YouTube only shows. You need some place for them to work. And so it's only fair for them to kind of understand what's happening. Granted, they'd love to see their contracts out, but how are you going to do that? He said, it remains to be seen how they're doing that. I'm sure part of that is they're looking at, is there another TV deal they can possibly sign? Ring of Honor, is that TV deal ever going to happen? But they kind of have their own roster there. Basically, what does it look like for your company if you have X amount of hours per week and you have a lot of people on the sidelines? For me, I understand there's a lot of debates back and forth. I would release the types like Miro. Ray Phoenix, I would possibly consider. Ricky Starks is an interesting case. If you have malcontents, just at this point, you got to start turning the ship around. And when it comes to talents wanting to stay and sign with your company. And in doing this year interview series, one of the things I noticed is that a lot of companies, a lot of wrestlers, they're not even in WWE. They're not even going to free agency. They're sticking around. They have no interest in doing it. They like what they are. And the promise of potentially more money or creating a bidding war is not happening. And there's a lot of silence on the AEW side when it comes to some of these talents. They're like, I don't know why I'm not being used. They're just sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. So that'll be an interesting thing for them in the year ahead. And a couple other things before we get out of here, a few more minutes left. TNA, interesting year for them. They had in some ways, a breakthrough year in 2024. And they have a very interesting year coming up because likely Jordynne Grace is going to be gone. Signing with WWE, I think everyone assumes there's a reason to think she was so featured in that crossover angle with TNA, with NXT rather. Josh Alexander looks to be heading to free agency as well at the early part of the year. Where does he land up? I think that's a very interesting question. He's super in talented in ring performer, a little bit up there in terms of age. There's not really much else I think he can do in Impact in TNA. But where is the fit in WWE? Is it on NXT? If so, in what role? Is it with Ethan Page or some form of fashion? Could he reform the North team with Ethan Page? And perhaps maybe that's a main roster act, possibly. I guess you could do that. But really kind of as we look ahead, what's his future? And he's been a big part of that. They always tend to bring in interesting people for short runs. I think Mike Santana is probably due a world title run at some point. And once someone leaves, someone else is able to step up. I think they could bolster their women's division quite a bit and really kind of add some interesting names there. Perhaps, Tegan Knox or some other people that are kind of out there that just give them a run and see what they can do. So I think that'll be key for them. But the big thing is they have two big arena shows booked for this year coming up, one in New York and one in LA. the UBS Arena. I cannot remember off the top of my head where the LA show is. I think it might be where USC plays their games. But the UBS Arena, I mean, that's a building that AEW has struggled booking in the past due to the amount of people and so on and so forth. So what do they have up their sleeve? So July, I believe Slammiversary is the TNA show at the UBS. What do they have up their sleeve for that? Why are they so confident they're going to be able to really make a 10,000 seat building look good? And of course, it could do half house and so on, but what's the point of doing that, right? Are you going to have that many people there? I wonder if there's something else going on with WWE. Perhaps the NXT, there's a commitment there to do some sort of crossover show or something like that. And if so, how does that work? Does that relationship keep going? Is it done? I think we'll know about that a lot more in the next few months, of course, in each other's TV. But how do things look after Genesis in January, and how do they deal with some of these stars leaving? So TNA, interesting year for them in a lot of ways. They kind of, I think they're ready to try to really establish themselves as a number three, and perhaps as a stronger number two if they're able to actually land some free agents. That'll be kind of the big turn, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So interesting year for TNA, for WWE, and with AEW. Of course, you have MLW. They're going to keep doing their thing. What's the NWA doing? Are they able to financially exist for another year? Will they be around at the end of this year? In 2025, will they still be here and kicking? How are the indies doing? GCW, all these type of things. Because at some point, it's going to be too much wrestling for people, not enough spots, and I'm just kind of fascinated to see how it all plays out. You can talk about New Japan and their future and how they go about with Wrestle King and Wrestle Dynasty and so on and so forth, having to get some of the magic back. Back in a minute to wrap this show up. Wrestling Observer Live, coming right back. All right, back to wrap things up on a Sunday edition of Wrestling Observer Live. It has been a thrill being here the past 3 weeks. My name is Josh Neeson. I'm a contributing editor to WrestlingObserver.com, and it's been great to fill in. And obviously, you can hear this show every single day. Brian Alvarez, Mike Sempervivi, Jim Valley, and of course, Andrew Zarian, who returns next Sunday. I want to give a big shout out to the good folks at Sports Byline, Bailey especially, helped me out the past 3 weeks, getting the show all taken care of and all set to go. Great people there. Producer Dom, of course, you've heard his name quite a bit. And a big thanks to all of you, and all of you being all the listeners, whether you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. We don't thank you enough for your continued support of our website and all the people that work here. We have a lot of people that are getting paid writing for our website. If it's a TV recaps, podcasts, the editors, you know, everything. That support means that people can, you know, partially make a living, have some extra money during the month and so on. And that's a very important thing in this media climate. So we thank you for all your help and all that. And yeah, we have another big year ahead. It is crazy. We have 2025. I mean, we're on the doorstep, and we have in this next week, AEW and their simulcast on Max. How is that going to go? I assume the stream quality of that's fine, but what about the numbers? How's the ratings discourse change? And then a couple days after that, Raw begins on Netflix. And we're not going to know any numbers from that except the ones that they provide us. So there's going to be accurate. The ratings discourse that takes over the internet every single week is going to change completely, and we don't know how. There's going to be so many big stories in the year ahead. I cannot wait to be there. I hope you're there with us every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. And you can find us a variety of places, social media, YouTube, all that as well. So quite simply, thanks for listening. Have a fantastic 2025. Have a safe New Year's. If you're celebrating, don't drink and drive. And we'll hopefully talk to you again later on down the road. This has been Wrestling Observer Live.